We're beginning our learning together of Parsha Vayishlach. It's been a little bit of time since we last learned together. Baruch Hashem, a lot of good things have happened, also challenging things. So going forward, we're probably going to do a little bit less per Parsha. We're going to hit on kind of the main things. So I want to make sure that we engage the greater narrative as a whole of Sefer Bereishit and really take it all the way to its end. The only Sefer really that we never completed in the Midrashah in now its fourth year was Sefer Bereishit. So I want to make sure that we as a group are able to do that. So we're going to start. We'll probably just be, assuming we have Shiur on Wednesday, two Shiurim on a very dense Parsha on Parsha Vayishlach, and I want to hone in on two of the really key elements that are part of that broader theme, that broader narrative. And this one is actually going to harken back to things that we talked about a little bit last semester and things that we've also spoken about this semester as well. In the vein also, our learning should be Refuah Shleimah for Shoshana Bracha Perel at Middle Sara, as well as Tinok Ben Shoshana Bracha Perel. Tov. So, when we talked last Parsha, dig back to the last Parsha that we talked about, Parshat Vayetze. We spent a lot of time on Parshat Vayetze. It was also, these Parshat are so dense and so rich, and we had the time to really dig into a lot of key elements of Parshat Vayetze. We talked about how Vayetze was the Yitziah. It's all one paragraph. There are no breaks. There is no Tuchot or Stumot in the Parsha. It's all one narrative of the Yitziah, of the going out to Galut. And there's almost, therefore, an implication that our parsha would be on the flip side.
Full of a lot of
not necessarily, but thematically, if the last parsha was the Yitziah, the going out to Galut. No, it's not. We're not in Galut in this parsha, which you all have like a month to read. We're not in Galut in this entire parsha. It's this parsha that we return back to Eretz Yisrael. And that's exactly what Yaakov does in this parsha. That there is clearly some element of what's going to be going on through the historical process and the historical narrative of not going out to Galut, not what we're meant to accomplish in Galut, but the process of returning from Galut. And not just returning from Galut, but returning from Galut in a full and complete way. And there are a few things that hint to that in the context of this parsha. The first one is that Yaakov is no longer Yaakov as of this parsha. What does Yaakov become? He becomes Yisrael. He gets named Yisrael, indicating that both obviously have different connotations, different elements, different floors to the tremendous character and individual that is Yaakov Avinu. But Yisrael is clearly a name that he earns over time. The way that Maori puts it, it's a dichotomy that he often refers to, but here he places it in the context of Yaakov Avinu, that Yaakov Avinu is somehow the essence of Yaakov becoming, and Yisrael is the name of Yaakov being when he's arrived at that destination. Right, when he becomes the paradigm Yisrael, which we also talked about in our Vayetze discussions. There are other things that indicate to this. When we went into Vayetze, when Yaakov Avinu goes out, when does Yaakov Avinu go out? Time-wise?
After Yaakov.
Still can't understand until you're... Yeah. What? No, when does he go out in Parsha Vayetze? What did we focus on in that opening paragraph time-wise? The opening paragraph of the Parsha.
You want to have children.
Time-wise.
At night.
Thank you. He goes out at night. He has the dream. We said that there was so much significance to the fact that he goes out at night. On the flip side, now when he comes back, we talked about how night is always compared to, always relates to, uncertainty, and therefore, broader than that, or I guess not broader than that, depends how you look at it. What? Galut, or exile. Vayetze, at night, Galut, that they're all parallel. And therefore, Ge'ulah is going to be compared to what? To the daytime. Excellent. Good, to the daytime. And if we take a look inside the parasha, both of these concepts exist in the same context. When Yaakov goes and he battles what this this angelic, he's using that in that English word, this angelic figure, or what the Mefarshim bring out is the Sarosha Esav, the Malach that is associated in some way with Esav, this negative Malach. Vayomer, source number one, or in your Chumashim preferably, Perek Lamebet Pasuk Chavtet. Vayomer, Lo Yaakov Yamir Od Shimcha Ki Im Yisrael. Your name is now going to be Israel. Ki Sarita Im Elokim V'im Anashim V'tuchal. Because you have fought with godliness and with people and you've overcome. Then there's this interesting back and forth about getting the name of the Malach himself. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayikra Yaakov Shem Makom Pniel, Ki Ra'iti Elokim Panim El Panim Batinatzel Nafshi. And then what immediately happens next? Pasuk Lamed Bet, Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh. He's overcome, he's become Yisrael, he's returned to Eretz Yisrael, Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh. The sun now comes up, indicating again this return from Galut, this expression of somehow the return to Geula, of Yisrael in the context of this is Zrichat HaShemesh. A pasuk that we've referred to already a few times previously, even in our learning just this semester, we now see, and that happens deeper on in the Parsha, which really brings everything, I think, to a point of close in terms of this level of discussion. Source number two from Perek Lamegil Pasuk Yilchet in your Chumashim. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. He's Shalem now. He's complete. He's acquired the name Yisrael. He is, he's not becoming, he's arrived. Vayizrach lo Hashemesh, going from the night to the morning. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. He finally comes complete and lands in Eretz Yisrael, the entryway to Eretz Yisrael, which is Shechem, and that's actually going to be our topic in the next year. Those are the two topics we're going to talk about, is this aspect of Yaakov and the topic of Shechem, which is going to be our two topics for Parshat Vayishlach. Beretz Kanan, Vavobi Vadan Aram, Vayichan et Pinei Ha'ir. So Yaakov, now Yisrael, he's great. He's complete. He's arrived. All is well. But it's not so simple. Why is it not so simple? We just gave isolated psukim over the course of the greater narrative of the opening of Parshat Vayishlach. Is there anything you can think of off the top of your heads? I want you to think about the parasha, whether you're skimming it in your Chumashim now, whether you actually do get a chance to look over it over the last couple of weeks. Think about the actual storyline of what's happening from the beginning of Vayishlach all the way till we get to Shechem. We'll deal with Shechem and on next time. Is there anything that might contradict that? Yeah.
He's fighting with me, like he's about to fight with Esau one night. Right after he fights with Malach, he meets with Esau.
The whole altercation with Esau does not indicate an essence of completion and Geula and everything is amazing. The whole interaction with Esau is fraught with anxiety, with fear. He doesn't know what's going to be. He's very afraid of Esau. He sends him gifts, he prepares for war, he davens, and then when he goes and he actually approaches and encounters Esav, what's the first thing he does? Louder? Even before then, I think. That was in preparation. When he meets him, he bows down. He and his whole family bow down to Esav. An expression of subjugation to Esav. That's not how I imagine Geula to look like. That's not how I imagine Shlemut to look like. It's clearly more complex than that. While there are levels of Geula here, there's still some sort of push and pull in the level. Again, this anxiety of approaching and interacting with Esav. And the interaction itself seems to be that for, especially the opening, that Yaakov and his family, Yisrael and his family, seem to be subjugating himself to Esav. Go one step backwards. We just gave this whole long, beautiful description that he goes and he fights with the Malach of Esav and he overcomes and he gets called Yisrael and by Yisrach lo Hashemesh. But
he's supposed to figure out his whole situation with Esav before he can show him.
So go back, stick to that paragraph, stick to that whole story. We cleverly omitted a really important part of that story. He gets hurt. We'll get to you in a second. He gets hurt. Keep reading in the Parsha. Keep going back. Go back to source number one, or Lamed Bet, Pasuk, Lamed Bet. So I only read you the first half of the Pasuk. I even cleverly broke up the line so you wouldn't think to read forward. He gets hit on his Yerech, and he comes out of that interaction limping on his Yerech. Doesn't sound shalim to me. Sounds kind of broken. Sounds damaged. Sounds incomplete. So you want to tell me, okay, so he was limping, but it's not a big deal. It is a big deal, because Jessica says that that's not the only part of the story. It's not just part of the story. It's much wider and broader than this story. Because Jessica read to the next pasuk as well, Lamed Gimel, which says, Al-Kain lo yuchlu b'nei Yisrael et gid ha-nasheh. Therefore, but the story, the local narrative, zooms out and gives us a halacha for all time. Clearly a significance to that. Therefore, Klal Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael will not be able to eat the Gid HaNasheh, Asher Al-Kaf HaYerech, which is on the Yerech, Ad HaYom HaZeh, until this day, Kinagah B'Kaf Yerech Yaakov B'Gid HaNasheh. Now this isn't just telling us a halacha. It is telling us a halacha. It is usher to eat the Gid HaNasheh, which is in the Yerech, because Yaakov was attacked by this malach. But this pasuk is very overtly telling us that the damage that was done to Yaakov, the damage that was done to him, which is just renamed Yisrael, is not something that's local to Yaakov in his lifetime in that place, in that story. But the damage that was done is something which we carry with us through all generations, as it reflects itself halachically in the prohibition from eating the Gid HaNasheh for all time. So he's subjugating himself to Esav. He's limping, and his limp is eternal. So which is it? Is it Yaakov becomes Yisrael by Yisrach lo Hashemesh by Yavo Yaakov Shalem? Or is it the limping Yaakov who comes and bows down to Esav? Which one is it? Which is it of the two? There's something much, much more complex happening here underneath the surface. And to unpack that, what we're going to do is unpack this concept of Yerech. Ma ze Yerech. What is Yerech? He gets hit on his Yerech? What is that? Don't tell me that, like, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu was planning a fan, you know, it gets very competitive now, right? With all of these massive blockbuster movies that come out basically all year round. So Kadosh Baruch Hu sat there and thought, what haven't we seen on the big screen yet? What kind of actions? He was like, oh, nobody's ever attacked somebody's thigh before. So we're going to get a really cool shot of him going in slow-mo and then the malach slamming him on the thigh and then he's limping out, right? Get it in 3D, be great, we'll break the billion-dollar mark, we'll be good. Clearly that's not what happened. Kadosh Baruch Hu would definitely break the billion-dollar mark without having to think that hard, right? That's not what's happening. If it's specifically damaging his Yerech, it means that there's something specific to the Yerech. It wasn't an easy shot. There wasn't an opening there for the Malach. If the Malach chose to attack the Yerech specifically, there's something inherently meaningful in that. So I'll ask again. What is a Yerech? The Gid HaNasheh is a sinew. It's the sciatic nerve. I have no idea what that means, but I've also read the English books. Good. What is a Yerech? What? The thigh. The thigh of a person. Right now, even if we were to go back to our movie analogy, that isn't so exciting either. He banged him on the leg? What's so significant about that? So let's unpack. What is the meaning of this term, Yerech? What is it really hinting to? What is it really talking about? What's the significance of the Yerech? Yes, it is the thigh, but that there's more there than meets the eye as well. What are other contexts already in Sefer Bereishit? One context is already in Sefer Bereishit, one which we'll see later on in Sefer Bereishit, where the term Yerech appears. It may give us deeper understanding of what the Yerech is about. I'll get to you in a second because you were in Winter Midrashah. Anybody know? Parshat Chayei Sara. Anyone? No? What did we try this? Yes. What? If you like, you can also cleverly look in the next source on your sheets. Source number 3 from Parshat Chayisara. Avraham Zakein Baba Yimva Hashem Birachat Avraham Bakol. Vayomer Avraham El Avdo. Avraham says to who is he speaking to here? Eliezer. Good. Points. Well done. Speaks to Eliezer and he says, Zakim Bito, Hamoshel Bechol Asher Lo, Simna Yarcha Tachat Yirechi. Place your hand on my thigh. Why does he want you to place his hand on his thigh? What's happening in this interaction? A neder, Shwa. He's making a promise. Abraham wants Eliezer to promise him that he will make sure not to take a wife for Yitzchak from the people of the land that he is in, but rather to go back to his homeland and find a wife from there, which he does successfully in Rivka. To do that, he says, Simna yadcha tachat yirechi. Place your hand underneath my thigh, which is the Torah's way of basically saying, or Rashi brings it out, Chazal bring it out, is that you want to take a shvuah on something that is meaningful. We would say that that's like a, I think in the non-Jewish world you can say like, I swear on such and such's grave or something like that. Meaning this is something which is significant to me, and somehow by referencing that thing, it adds weight or significance. That comes from Torah. We just do it in a much different light. What's precious to the Jewish people are mitzvot. Avram Avinu did not have many mitzvot at the time. In fact, Avram Avinu really only had one mitzvah, which he had successfully completed on himself and his entire household. The mitzvah of?
Brit Milah.
Simna yarcha tachat yirechi means place your hand on the place of my Brit Milah and swear to me on this mitzvah that you will make sure to fulfill your word. Leave that out of day school. Right? But that's what's actually happening here. And it's not the only time that it happens. Who else makes a similar shvuah in Sefer Bereishit? No, that's a brit, but which is an important word that's associated, which we'll get to. Yes, that's all correct, but they don't make a brit like that. No, they make a shvuah like that. Yaakov asks Yosef, similarly to make a shua in the same way. In the next source, source number 4, from Parshat Vayichi. Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim shvatzri shana vayichi yimei Yaakov shnei chayav sheva shanim ve'arba'im ume'at shana. Vayikrivu yimei Yisrael lamut. Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, his days were coming to an end. Vayikrali b'no Yosef, he calls to Yosef, vayomar lo, im na masatichin ve'necha, if I have favor in your eyes, sim na yarcha tachat yirechim. Because he wants him to make a shvuah. Same thing. Promise me that you will not let me be buried in Mitzrayim, that I will go back to Eretz Yisrael. And same thing. Swear to me on the Devar Mitzvah, on the Brit Milah. And there we see also the lengths which Yosef goes through to make sure to fulfill that shvuah. He pleads with Paro, which was a very dangerous move, ask Paro to allow his second-in-command to travel out of Egypt, far away, to go bury his father in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan at the time. That was not a simple request. It wasn't done. But he follows through on the shvuah that he makes to his father. Further indication of this correlation between Yerech Brit Milah, or that which Brit Milah accomplishes, at the very beginning of Sefer Shmot. Source number 5, the very beginning of Sefer Shmot. Aleph Aleph. Ve'ele Shmot b'nei Yisrael haba'im Mitzrayim ha'et Yaakov ish v'itoba'u Ruven Shimon Levi Yehuda Yisachar Zvun v'Binyamin Dan v'Naftali Gad v'Asher. And listen to the Lashon here. Pasuk Hey. Vayihi kol nefesh yotzei yerech Yaakov shivim nefesh. Those who extended from Yaakov's Yerech, again clearly referring to the Makom HaBrit, Brit Milah, not, and like, hopefully you all are past this level of biology in college, right? His children didn't come from his thigh, right? So Yotzei Yerech here means his children, again, extension from Brit Milah. So there is a clear correlation between Yerech and Brit Milah. And that makes things interesting in terms of our story. Meaning, somehow the damage that the Sarosha Leisav, that the Malach does to Yaakov, is on the Yerech, somehow relating to the Makom HaBrit. What's the meaning of that? How do we understand that? The human body can be divided into three parts. Let's try to discuss this. I'm going to go with a stick figure, not because I can't draw, but because I can't draw. Here we go. There's our person. Best stick figure you ever did see. Okay? So what happens? We have three parts. We have the most elevated parts. We have the Rosh. Then we have the core of the person himself, to use the himself, herself, whatever it may be. You have the body, the goof. And then you have, from the waist all the way to the toes. Right? You have the bottom, we'll call it the rakvayim, but I don't remember exactly how the Sfarim break it up in terms of those terms. But you have it divided into three parts. Of these three parts of the human being, what is Rosh always indicative of? Not just a head. What is Rosh always indicative of?
Essence.
Highest place. Thought. Okay. Think a little bit more broadly. What?
Spiritual.
All good, all true. When you think of something like Rosh Hashanah, it's the beginning, it's the start, it's the origin, it's where all things come from. All things do also start in the spiritual realm. But the Rosh is the origin. It's the source, it's where everything is meant to come from. In an Adam Mitukan, in a person who's perfected themselves, all of their actions, everything that happens from the head down, should be guided by the head. Things go wrong when the physicality of the body rules over the head, takes control over the being, instead of it being ruled by the head. But the Rosh is the source, it's the origin, it's where everything comes from. The body is the core of the person, the torso, the body is the core of the person, the core of that person's being. And underneath that you have the legs. The legs are what extend beyond the person. If a person, lo aleinu, does not have legs, can they still live? If a person doesn't have a head, can they live? Good, okay, so we are awake, we're just not totally focused, that's fine. If a person doesn't have a torso, if a person is missing central organs of their body, can they live? No. Meaning, my head and my torso, my head and my body, my Rosh and my goof, are essential to who I am. And I can't exist without them. Somehow my legs extend beyond me, and I need them, but I can live without them. Because it's the legs, that's the part of the human being that take a person beyond. I'm here. I exist. I'm here. If I want to get from here to there, what gets me from here to there?
Legs.
My legs, my recline. They're what allow me to go somewhere else, to move, to take me forward, to progress. Similarly, the other aspect of this lower part of the body is also the reproductive area of the body, because that's what allows me also to, on a deeper level, literally go beyond myself, to reach not just farther in space, but farther in time, to produce children who will outlive me, who will go beyond me. But my ability to stretch forward, to go forward, to move forward, that's all from the lowest part of the body, below the waist, all the way down to the bottom of the feet. That's my ability to move forward in the world. I just made that distinction now. I've never heard that distinction specifically made of space and time, but we'll use it because it makes sense to me, unless somebody can figure out why that wouldn't make sense. But my legs allow me to move forward in space, and the Makom HaBrit allows a person to move forward in time, to progress in time, to go forward, to go beyond oneself. If you want, you connect it to Avar, Oved, and Atid. Or Haya, Oved, Yeh. Right? Everything is Avar, everything came from the Rosh. It exists, the body of my reality, literally, figuratively, is in the torso, and my future, where I extend to, is in the bottom of my body, has been my recline. Past, present, future, same idea. The way that generations are discussed in Torah as well, you would have the parent, the child, and the grandchildren. That's a normal structure of life. Bezrat Hashem, everybody should be able to see their children and their grandchildren. Already seeing great-grandchildren is a luxury. But we say, Ki tolid banim uvenei vanim, to quote a pasuk from Devarim. There are also quotes from Tefillah that we could quote, but there's a lot of situations where we talk about both children and grandchildren. That's that three-part, that three-piece. Indicative of what? What does three also remind us of? Why is three so significant that we want to draw together three pieces? Why does it also indicate continuity, sustainability?
Plus.
Think halachically. Three creates a chazaka. Excellent. Three creates chazaka. Once you already have you and your children and your grandchildren, you're already more set up that you're likely going to continue on positively throughout generations. The pasuk, I believe it's in Kohelet, that my Rebbe always quotes, is "Bechut ha-mishulash lo bimheira yinatek." The triple corded thread, meaning if it has three cords in it, if the rope has three cords in it, that's much harder to break apart. Three is a reality of strength. Again, you have Avar, Hove, Atid, you have parents, children, and grandchildren, and again, the idea is that last part is what's taking you forward and gives you continuity. A person is built with the potential to draw from the past, to bring it into the present, and to extend into the future. And that happens not just, again, in the legs with walking, but with the Makom HaBrit, with the Brit Milah, in the sense of, again, producing offspring. The production of offspring that come through. I'll put it in the broadest sense. You're not going to get into this. We'll avoid some of the key words here, but it needs that all of the parts that are necessary, all of the aspects that are necessary for reproduction, and in a man, what is a man called? He who is meant to draw from the past, bring it into the present, and then extend into the future. How do we refer to a man or a male? Other words? Keep going. Zachar. What word is Zachar connected to? Zechar or Zikaron. Memory. Meaning, when a man utilizes his reproductive capacity correctly, he's drawing from the past into the present and passing that on to the future through the reality of reproduction. That's the reality of Zachar. If something goes wrong and a person doesn't properly move things from the Rosh to the Guf and then into future generations, and there isn't that Zikaron, the Zachar doesn't live up to that which he is meant to live up to, what's the opposite of Zikaron? Follow the process of thought. What's the opposite of Zikaron?
Shakach.
Shakach,
Shikach.
Get together. Shikachah, forgetfulness, when it doesn't happen that way. What part of the body does the Sarosh HaLesav damage? We said it's the Yerech. What can't be eaten for all generations? The Gidha, the Gidha Nasheh. This root is connected to the very essence of Shikachah itself. How so? Give a couple of examples. One of them is, whose name is related to the word Nashe, Gira Nashe? Louder. Menashe. Let's go to the source of his name. Source number 6. Ul Yosef Yuvad Shnei Banim. Yosef has 2 children. B'terem tavo shnat ha-ra'av asher yaldalo osnat bat potifera kohen on. He has 2 children from osnat bat potifera. Vayikra Yosef et sheva bechor menashe. Ki nashani Elokim et kol amali et kol beit avi. Because God has allowed me to forget. Nashani, menashe, gira nashe is linked to forgetting. Pasuk that is referenced in the context of, I think it's the Malachim who are arguing with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and saying, why should human beings be allowed to get the Torah? How could human beings who are forgetful get that which is eternal? The Pasuk is, Ma enosh ki tizkerena. What is man that he should be remembered? Because he's an enosh. Milashon nasheh, milashon minasheh. Again, relating to the context of forgetfulness. Yeah.
Is there any connection to the Enosh from
Noah? Absolutely. Says Jessica, if this is going to follow through, that it should go back all the way to Enosh. What was the sin of Dor Enosh? What did they bring into the world? What was the sin of Dor Enosh? Especially when we were here last semester. Avodah Zarah. Where does Avodah Zarah come from? From forgetting Kadosh Baruch Hu. If you're no longer cognizant of the consistent presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you get what it means to live in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence, you can move towards Avodah Zarah. But if you're cognizant, if you remember that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is here, that you have a direct connection with him, there's no way you can possibly get into a reality of Avodah Zarah. Let's move forward and start wrapping up. Sorry. Not as focused today as I usually am. So let's come back to our union. I don't have a good short explanation of it, but that would also be the balance, as you mentioned before, between Zachar and Nekeva or Nashim. What's the balance between the Zikaron of the Zachar and the Menashe, or how was it phrased? Or the aspect, yeah, but from the Lashon of Menashe, or Nashani, Nashim Lashon Nashani. What's the connection there, and what's the balance that's created then between the union of a husband and a wife? For another time. Let's go back to our union. Yaakov comes. Bring everything full circle. Yaakov comes in our parsha back to Eretz Yisrael. He comes back and he's named Yisrael. He reaches a level of Shlemut. He comes to a place of Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. Yaakov has reached a level of perfection as Yisrael. How is it possible for Yaakov to reach a reality of Yisrael and Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh and Shlemut, and yet at the same time be damaged on his Yerech specifically? How can it be both? You tell me. How can it be both? Based on everything that we said about what it means, about what the Yerech really is, what the Yerech is really about. How can Yaakov both be Shalem and his Yerech be damaged?
Because it's an extension of himself.
It's an extension of himself that goes beyond himself. What aspect of Yaakov is damaged?
His children.
His children. Yaakov reaches Shlemut. Yaakov becomes Yisrael. I never realized this before, even the way that it's phrased. It doesn't even say in the Pasuk, it's very powerful, if this is correct. If this is correct. It doesn't say Vayizrach HaShemesh, what does it say? Vayizrach Lo HaShemesh, just to him. Not that mean it was for the whole world, but meaning it's relative to him. Yecholiot. Vayizrach Lo HaShemesh. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. They all went to Shechem. Why just Vayavo Yaakov? He reaches a reality of a certain level, a level of perfection. He reaches a reality of perfection. But he walks out damaged on his Yerech, meaning there are going to be issues with his children going forward. This shouldn't be surprising to us. Because what did we talk about last year? We talked about Lavan. Bikesh Lavan la'akor et hakol. Lavan wanted to try to uproot everything. How did he try to uproot all of Klal Yisrael? By planting hatred and jealousy within his children. The children were the ones who were at risk. But when the children are at risk, and our Rebbe doesn't pull these pieces together exactly like this. This is how I pulled it together listening to his shiurim. Lavan bikesh la'akor et hakol. Lavan tried to destroy everything by planting seeds of jealousy and hatred amongst the children of Yaakov. If the children of Yaakov aren't able to get their act together, aren't able to overcome that hatred and that jealousy, who is their war going to be with should they fail at living up to what it means to be B'nai Yisrael? Is it going to be with B'nai Lavan? No. No, B'nai Lavan. There's really only one or two interactions fighting against B'nai Lavan, which comes out in Bilam, but that's a story for another sefer. The context of Bilam. Who do they come into conflict with when they don't live up to being B'nai Yisrael for the majority of history? Pull it all together. B'nai Esav are the ones, or Esav himself is the one who benefits from an inability for the children of Yaakov to live up to being B'nai Yisrael. And therefore, the Sarosh Shel Esav hits him on the thigh, and that's why Yaakov is still incredibly fearful when he approaches Esav. Because he may be fine, but there is no guarantee for his children who are going to come into conflict with the children of Esav. And that's the foundation for his trepidation in approaching Esav and the basis of the interaction that they have. And that's exactly what Esav wants. If we go back and recall the bracha that was given to Esav, which we talked about last semester from Parsha Toldot. Take a look in source number 7, Parsha Toldot. Esav says, you gave the bracha to Yaakov, you don't have any bracha for me? Yitzchak, Abba, Tati, you didn't have anything for me? And he starts to cry. Source number 7, Perek Havzayim Pasuk Lamechet. Vayomer Esav el Aviv, Esav says to his father, Habracha achat ilach lecha, Avi bracheni gam ani avi ba'isa Esav klo v'yiklev, one bracha for me, please. And he starts to cry. Pasuk Lamechet. Vayan Yitzchak Aviv, Yitzchak immediately says, Vayomer Elav, Hinei mishmanei ha'aretz yeh moshavecha, from the fat of the land will be your dwelling, umital ha'shamayim me'al, and from the dew of the heavens above. Ve'al charbecha tichyeh, you will live by your sword. We've seen that's certainly true of the children of Esav throughout history. We talked about the Parsha Toldot. Ve'et achicha ta'avod, and you will serve your brother, meaning whom? Who's the brother of Esav? Thank you. You will serve Esav. Well, you'll serve Yaakov. This is what we focus on in those Toldot Shirim. Tarid ufarakta ulo me'al tzavarecha. When he lowers himself down, you will be able to throw off his yoke from your neck. Remember, we talked about the seesaw relationship of Esav and Yaakov. When Romy is up, the Gemara said Yerushalayim is down, and when Yerushalayim is up, Romy is down. That's based on this pasuk. Either Esav's up or Yaakov is up. And that's the fulfillment of this bracha. The Saro Shel Esav hits Yaakov on the Yerech in order to damage his children, that Bnei Yisrael should falter. Because that's what gives Esav the ability to rise up and to dominate over the course of history. That was exactly the damage that Esav wanted to do to Yaakov, who himself was Shalim. The Saro Shel Esav realized he couldn't overcome Yaakov, but he may be able to overcome his children. And that sets the stage for the 2,000-year confrontation with Esav that leads us to Geulah. How do we know how to overcome the 2,000-year exile and confrontation with Esav? Where do we learn? Where in the Pesukim do we see the hints to how to overcome the exile of Esav? The Sfarim say from this Parsha. From this interaction between Yaakov and Esav. This teaches us the secrets of how to overcome our exile under Esav, under Edom for all time. This is where it's happening. And it's therefore at the end of this interaction that we're told what the ultimate destination is, because as we said from the beginning, this is the parsha of how to get to Geula. How does the parsha end? And with this we'll close. Not the parsha as a whole. This parsha meaning this paragraph of this discussion. Take a look inside in your source number 8, the end of the paragraph in the confrontation with Esav. Vayomer, Esav says, Nis'av ne'lecha ve'elcha l'negdecha. Come, let's travel together forward. Vayomer Elav Adoni. Vayomer Elav. Yaakov replies, Adoni yodea ki yaladim rakim. Listen, you know, my kids, they're young, they're schleppy. Vatzon vavakar alot alai, and I have a lot of flock, and they're all moving very slow. Utvakum yom echad vameitu kol atzon. If you push them too hard, they're not going to be able to live. Yavor na adoni lifnei avdo. You go ahead of me. You go on. It's okay. You go on. Vani et nahalal iti leregel amlacha asher lefanai. I'll go slowly according to what I need to do. Or leregel yiladim, and based on how quickly the children go. Ad asher avoel adoni seir, until I get to you in seir. Right. You go on ahead. Right. Classic move. Somebody invites you to dinner, you're not sure you want to go, you go ahead and you grab us all seats and we'll see you there. Right? Does he get there? Does he go to Seir? Does Yaakov ever go to Seir? No. He doesn't follow him. He doesn't go there. In fact, the paragraph ends off with, Yaakov nasa Sukkota. It's like, you go to Seir, I'll catch up, and off to Sukkot. How does he tell him that? Chazal asked that question. Chazal say, I looked through every pasuk in Chumash, and Yaakov never goes seer. Yaakov ish emet. He's not a liar. Yaakov is the ish emet. We talked about it last semester. That's who he is. How does he say, I'm going to follow you to seer? And they link it to the following pasuk from Ovadiah, that in the end of days, Yaakov will go to Seir. Pasuk that many of us are familiar with. Perachaf Aleph in Ovadia. Va'alu Moshiim Bahar Tzion Lishpot et Har Esav. That we will eventually go to judge Har Esav in Seir. Then we will be able to overcome them in the end of days, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be reflected in the world. The kingship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be reflected in the world through us. When we fix all those issues, when we resolve all those problems, when we rise once again to prominence, when the children live up to the shlemut of their father Yisrael, we truly become, in essence, B'nai Yisrael. Then we will once again, when we fix the damage to that Yerech, be able to confront Esav, overcome Esav, and see the full Ge'ulah itself come out. Bezrat Hashem, we should be able to overcome those issues in our generation. The issues of Sin'ah and Kin'ah, the damage that was, the seeds that were planted by Lavan and the damage that was enacted by Esav, that reflects itself in the jealousy and the hatred and the sinaskinam that exists in the reality that we now are in this galut, the galut of Edom, a galut that is defined by sinaskinam. That's what we lost the second Beis HaMikdash to. We should see the resolution of those issues, the rise of Yisrael to their shlemut, and through that, the overcoming of Seir, the overcoming of Esav, and the melucha returning to where it should be.